celebration. But we just need one night off to apply that good pressure.
You're tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. We're the campus community radio station broadcasting on top of Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University. We respectfully acknowledge that CJSF broadcasts on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Coquitlam First Nations. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on the unceded territories of the Katsi, Coquitlam, and Stolo First Nations. Typically Tuesday streams online at cjsf.ca. There you can find archived episodes of Typically Tuesdays, so that's our show, and you can find episodes of your other favorite CJSF programs. You can also follow CJSF online on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, YouTube, and Instagram by looking up CJSF Radio. You can also follow Typically Tuesdays online now on Instagram. We're at Typically Tuesdays. My name is Leslie.
And I'm Jade.
We have a really exciting program today. We have a really exciting chat, discussion, interview type thing happening for you. We're talking to Rachel Lau, who is one of the co-collaborators on a mobile library of zines called Queer Reads Library. Now, we're speaking to them because they are hosting an exhibition at the Vancouver Art Book Fair coming up this Thursday. And we're going to be talking to them a little bit more about their work, what they do with QRL and Vancouver Art Book Fair. So to start off, I guess I'll introduce Rachel right off of their website. So Rachel Lau is a multidisciplinary artist, writer, and radio producer. Through audio storytelling, film photography, and zine making, they contemplate what it means to experience longing in a world that's transient. They are interested in the process of death and decay, along with our mortal resistance to it. Currently, Rachel is a co-librarian of Queer Reads Library, a mobile library of independently published queer books and zines based in Hong Kong and Vancouver. They are also a recent graduate of the Media Studies program at the University of British Columbia with a minor in Asian Canadian and Asian Migration Studies. Hopefully that's like a fair gist. Welcome to the show, Rachel. Hello.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. Wow, that bio is so good. I wonder who wrote that.
Incredibly sophisticated writer.
I believe I wrote that because I read it.
Yeah. If you read it on air, you must have written it.
Yeah. I think that's how that works.
How the law works.
Mm-hmm. The law.
Now we're talking about the law.
Yeah, that is CRTC, basically. It says that if you read something on public radio, you own the copyright to the materials that you read. That's not how CRTC works, listeners. Please don't listen to me. I think that's actually like the opposite of how that works.
Oh, that's too bad. It would have been really interesting though, because when you said it, basically it would have been established.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I am the law. The power this holds, incredible.
Incredible.
Anyways, thank you, Rachel. Welcome to the show. We're really grateful that you've accepted our invitation to come on the show. So first of all, thank you, Leslie, for that comprehensive introduction. And I just want to ask these questions to you again. Who is Rachel? What does Rachel do?
I always find this question really funny because my first reaction to the question is whether I should talk about myself in third person or first person. Like, Rachel is, or do I say I am? Well, I think you covered a lot of it from reading the bio on my website, so thank you for that. Yeah, I definitely would say that I'm an artist, writer, and radio producer. I'm a queer Cantonese artist, writer, and radio producer. And what I do a lot of things. And a lot of the times I like to sum it up as I have lots of feelings and I make things. And I think that's truly what drives my work. I think that
nice.
I am constantly, as many artists are responding to the world around me and using art as a way to process, contemplate those things. And the current mediums that I work in is primarily, as Leslie has read from my bio, film photography, sound, as well as zine making. So I would describe in terms of like the kind of work that I make or what subjects I touch on, it ranges from sort of autobiographical, so I make a lot of purzines, for example, to things that are pertain more to kind of political resistance or social cultural critique. So for example, like I have a zine that I made recently about my fear of abandonment, right, which is super personal. And then I have another zine that I made about working a 9-to-5 and kind of questioning 9-to-5 culture and working under capitalism and what that means for us and why we're okay with some of the things that we're sort of expected to do as workers under 9-to-5 capitalism. So it really ranges in terms of the things that I do. And I really enjoy being able to work in multiple mediums. I think that that's where I thrive. So the whole jack of all trades, but master of none thing, but better than a master of one. People don't have to say the last part.
That's true.
You mentioned that you do work with sound, which is really interesting to me. Can you maybe talk to us a little bit more about the kind of work you do with sound?
For sure. I was so stoked when the two of you reached out to me because I also started at my campus radio station. Shout out to CITR.
Ooh, CITR.
Love of my life, honestly. We're radio is king. Or royalty, I guess. Let's not leave anybody out.
Or actually, let's not. Let's get rid of the monarchy.
It's just an entity.
Radio is something. It's a thing.
Radio is the best. Community radio is the best. So that's how I got started in sound. I remember joining CITR in my first year of university, and I started out with some of the collectives at CITR and making radio that way. So I was doing that for a little while, and then I had a show at one point, but I'm sure, as you know, as people who are working community radio or even just like as students who do community radio, it's a lot to keep up with. So I wasn't able to continue with that, but I was doing a music show for a little while called RIP Radio. And then after that, I moved more into the realm of narrative audio storytelling. So something that's more podcast-like, I think what people usually associate with that style of radio or audio. So I was doing that for a while. And my most recent project was the Speak My Language project with Yarrow Intergenerational Society for Justice. And that was a community-based project working with Vancouver's Chinatown, specifically Chinese seniors and youth. And we were talking about the barriers that come along with accessing healthcare in BC, specifically around language barriers. So I was doing more of a mentorship and coordinator role in that position. But more recently, I've taken an interest into sound art. So I'm moving into that realm a little bit more. And one of the first sound art pieces I made that played on CITR for 24 hours of radio art was actually a sound art piece about my time living in Hong Kong from 2018 to 2019, which is actually when Queer Reads Library started too. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. And that was kind of like an audio journal, place-based audio piece about Hong Kong. And right now, the next sort of forthcoming audio project that I have in the works is called You Have One New Message. And that one is a crowdsourced voice message composition, like an experimental composition that I'm putting together that will come out next year. So yeah, that's what I do with sound. I think it's definitely changed over the course of 5 years. Wow, I can't believe I'm doing radio for 5 years now. But I started at CITR, community radio station, so I have a lot of love for CJSF and CITR. Nice. And
yeah,
the like,
we're frenemies.
Frenemies. Oh, okay.
Yes. Rivals and friends, like Phoenix Wright and Miles Edgeworth.
Oh my God. Okay.
Bring in my weeaboo phase again. I'm sorry.
We've done a lot of shows about that.
We've had a lot of shows about Ace Attorney. So it comes back to the back of my mind.
So yeah, as you said before, we're gonna talk a little bit about Queer Reads Library, and we're hopefully gonna do it now. So what is Queer Reads Library? Yeah, let's start with that one.
Okay, love it. Keep it simple. Yeah, so Queer Reads Library, or QRL for short, in Cantonese, the name is Lao Dong Yut Ho. And we are a mobile library of queer books and zines. Pretty much it.
So what inspired its creation?
Yes, so it's funny, the story of how I joined Queer Reads Library, but I'll start with the origin story first and kind of get to the part where I become part of the team. So in 2018, in the summer of 2018, the Hong Kong Public Library had banned 10 LGBTQ themed children's books. So what they did was they put them in the closed stacks, essentially, is what they said. And so they pulled them off the shelves. And what you need to do is that you need to access the books through special request. And that means that you need to approach the librarian, give them your personal information, and be able to get the book. And so the point is that nobody is going to do that, because what are they going to do with your personal information when you give that to them, right? It's like, you don't know what they're going to do with that list. And essentially, it's also saying that these books are not okay. And that's why there's an extra step that you need to take in order to, you know, access the books. So some of the books you might be familiar with, the one called Tango Makes Three.
Tango Makes Three, yeah.
Yeah, Tango Makes Three, which is about the gay, like, penguin family.
That adopted a child, yeah.
Yeah.
Essentially.
And then there's Mommy and Me, which is about, like, alternative family structures. So those were some of the books that were banned. And in light of that, my co-librarians and friends, Beatrix Pang and Caitlin Chan, said, oh, well, that's not right. And also, we have all of these independently published queer books and zines in our own personal collection that aren't necessarily getting as much love or doing as much work as they could be if we had shared them with other people. So let's do this. So that's how they started the library. And they had their first debut at Eaton Hong Kong, which is a hotel that also has sort of this socially progressive kind of brand. And so they do programming around those topics and subjects. And so they supported the first launch of Queer Reads Library. So we showed the 10 banned books along with a portion of the collection that was growing at the time. So I actually started as a reader of Queer Reads Library, and I was new friends with Beatrix and Caitlin. And I was such a fan. And I said, oh, if there's anything you need, I can help. Like, I love your library. It's so cool. And I just wanted to support my friends. And then it was actually through an interview that I did with them. I wanted to interview them about the library. And then that interview kind of didn't really end up getting published. But then in the process of doing that interview and getting to know the two of them better and the project better, they invited me to join their team. And then we've been working together since January of 2019 on the library. So yeah, and I was living in Hong Kong at the time, and the three of us were all based in Hong Kong, but I've since moved back. So now that's why the library is based on two continents. So it's in Hong Kong and Vancouver.
Covering a lot of ground there, quite literally. So tell us a little bit about how QRL operates. Yeah.
For sure. Queer Reads Library is it's so DIY, honestly. It's just, I think so much of figuring out how the library works has also just been a negotiation of, like, how to have, like, lateral equal relationships between friends and collaborators, but also how to navigate distance and how to navigate working, I mean, essentially within capitalism, so trying to survive on our own and doing our own thing while also trying to make this project and this collaboration work. So In terms of the actual library itself and how that structure works, so in 2019, that was kind of like the there was a lot happening in that first year when we really established ourselves. So a lot of what we did were what we called pop-up libraries. So we would just lug a suitcase with a selection of our library to a location that would have us, whether that be a book fair or a pride parade or just some kind of random space. And then we would just show up and we're like, hey, here we go. Here's our books. Here's our library. Come read, check it out. And that was a lot of what we did. And then we also started to do some talks and workshops. And ever since we've sort of parted ways, because in 2019, Caitlin had moved to Taipei for a fellowship. Beatrix stayed in Hong Kong to continue her work as an independent publisher through Small Tune Press. And then I had moved back to Vancouver to finish schooling. Then the structure became a little bit different because we had fewer pop-up events and we were trying to navigate what it meant to be on two different continents and then also be able to engage our readers. And then now with the pandemic, COVID-19, gathering is just really difficult and sometimes not possible. So I think we've definitely shifted towards a more online approach for how we want to structure the library or at least reach our readers.
That sounds really interesting. And I do have a question here about what it's like to organize a library that shifts in its size and its form. I have read that partly due to kind of like the spacing issues in, from where you started, you had to be really resourceful is not the right word, but kind of like creative and agile about how you were setting up and how you were taking up space. Would you like to talk a little bit about that right now?
For sure. I think that the mobility and fluidity of QRL is a pretty important part of our project. So, as you've read, a big part of why we're mobile is because space is just so hard to come by in Hong Kong and it's expensive. And arguably, I'm sure the both of you know, space is hard to come by in Vancouver and it's expensive. I think that Hong Kong and Vancouver are cousins in a housing crisis, but that is a topic for another day. So, I think that that reality, that sort of I don't know if I want to say barrier necessarily, but definitely an obstacle. It is still true to our library, but I think from a more less reactive standpoint and more proactive, I think that the library is mobile because we're interested in where it will take us. So a big part of the concept behind that was a question we posed for ourselves when we started the library, and it was, where are the queer spaces in Hong Kong? Where are they? If it's not like a gay bar or like a bathhouse, for example, then where do queer people go? And especially if you want to be sober, if you don't want to party, like where do queer people go? What are they doing? What are they into? And so the library kind of functioned to answer that question or seek the answers to that question. So I often like to say that we go where people will have us. So we're interested in where people will accept the library and be willing to showcase it or be excited to showcase it. And I think the beautiful part about the mobility is that, let's say you imagine like a queer bookstore, for example, and it's a physical location, it's a set address, chances are that the people who are going there to that bookstore already know that they're going there, right? They have the intention to go there. It's the kind of clientele that you would expect or are trying to reach. But the interesting thing about Queer Reads Library is because we're mobile, we often go into spaces that have readers that wouldn't necessarily come to a physical space intentionally that host queer titles and queer books. So, for example, we'll be at art book fairs where there's all kinds of readers, and they'll see our library and they say, oh, this is pretty interesting. What's this Queer Reads Library about? Let me go read something. And so then what happens is we have this exchange where there are people who are an unexpected audience who also engage with the library, along with the people that we usually suspect, which is other fellow queer folks who are into printed matter. So I think that is sort of a good summary of the mobility of Queer Reads Library and how that operates and what the intention behind it is.
Thank you for that. I think we'll move on to questions that have to do with a little bit about, I don't know, language, I guess. So we do a bit of chatter on the show about translation and the localization of non-English words. Literally translates to something like mobile reading cool, or mobile reading queer, as folks who are familiar with Chinese might know. There's a whole thing with like words making up a phrase and such. Mobile reading cool isn't like a really super easy thing to say in English. But this name has a really punchy significance to it in Chinese. And I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about why QRL has this name and if you could talk about its meaning.
Yeah, for sure. I also love talking about language and translation as someone who grew up in a Cantonese speaking household and also grew up learning Mandarin too. Like, I'm always thinking about language, especially given the work that I do with Chinatown too. So I'm very excited about this question is what I want to say. So yeah, Lao Dong Yu Ho. I have to give total credit to my co-librarian and friend Beatrix. She was the one who came up with the title and I think it's super clever. And so Lao Dong, as you say, it means mobile, and Yu Ho is kind of actually a pun because Yu To is to read. And so we took Ho and replaced Do with Ho instead. And as people who are familiar with the term Ho Yi, it means queer, but it actually comes from more commonly the Mandarin word for it, which is Ku Er, and it sounds like queer. So it's kind of like a literal sound related kind of translation that brought over. Because as some people are familiar, if you're familiar, there's also the term like Tong Zi or Tong Zi, which is like homosexual. And that was the term that was used for a while, but I think Ku Er is kind of like a more new one. And as you say, it also means cool. And I love that the like four letters encompasses so much, because as you say it in English, it just sounds kind of clunky and sounds kind of weird. Like, why are you saying all those words? But I think in Chinese, it works quite perfectly. And I think that it, it really embodies one, what we're doing as a library, but also it, I think, is a pretty suitable translation for the English name as well. If anything, I think the Chinese name actually says more, because Queer Reads Library, you know, it tells you, you know, we're a library, it's gay, you're going to be reading some things from us, right? Whereas Lao Dong Yu Ho has so much more kind of reference in it, right? It talks about the mobility of the library and the fluidity of the library, as well as the fact that it's queer and it's cool, hopefully. And, you know, and we welcome readers to join us. So that's a little bit of background behind the Chinese name for QRL.
If you're a regular listener of this show or other shows on CJSF, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us about what you like and why you like it, as well as ways we can improve our programming. To leave comments, please email cjsfprog@sfu.ca or call 778-782-4423. This information can also be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.
If you're tuning in just now, you're listening to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Jade and I are talking to Rachel Lau, who is one of the co-collaborators and co-librarians of Queer Reads Library, a mobile library operating in Hong Kong and also in Vancouver. And then we're going to be talking to them a little bit about their exhibition at Vancouver Art Book Fair, and also talking to them a little bit about what QRL does. Moving on, so I read about the queer lexicon workshop the QRL facilitated last year in Hong Kong. I'm really interested to know what the workshop was about and why it was held.
Right. There's so much with the Queer Lexicon Project. I think that what started as a workshop has really grown and expanded into a much larger project. And I would argue that that's a pretty significant arm in Queer Reads Library now and what we're doing. So there's more coming for people who want to stay tuned with what we're doing. But how it started was actually at the Hong Kong, let me try to remember the acronym, HKQLCF. It's a kind of a mouthful. So it's Hong Kong Queer Literary and Cultural Festival. There we go. So it was the third annual festival, and that was spring of 2019. And at the time, we had a talk that was showing some titles from our library. So we had kind of like an intimate reading circle with those who attended the festival. And one of the books that we showcased was called Qi Ban Lan, and it's a queer lexicon book. And this was based out of Vietnam. And so this was also, I believe, I want to say that it was like a crowdsourced lexicon. And they put these terms together that was, I remember, you know, like queer Vietnamese terms from a particular area or queer Vietnamese terms that were referring to specific like sex acts or names or like things that were particularly based out of like Saigon, for example. And in that sharing circle, in that reading circle at the festival, one of the questions that came up was the people who were there were asking like, oh, do we have a Hong Kong version of that? Like, do we have a Cantonese version of that? Is there anything like that's like Qi Ban Lan? And people said, oh, I don't think so. Like, not that I've seen or know of. And it was from that moment that we said, oh, hey, like, why don't we have a workshop then? Like, just to talk about it and just to see what kind of terms come up and what, you know, we end up discovering about the terms that we use and the words that we use within community. So that's how it started. And then when we actually had the workshop, it was pretty cool. It was definitely across the LGBTQ spectrum. And it was also cross-generational. So it was really cool to see the way the different terms came together and the different languages and where those terms were coming from. And we had these beautiful mind maps that each person made. And we have scans of all of those, but we also made like a broader mind map. That was when each person shared one of the terms from their own personal mind map. And we made a huge mind map for the workshop. And so now we've been working on the Queer Reads Library lexicon, hopefully so that we could have some kind of print publication. And also we're hoping an online component that will continue to grow over time to grow the lexicon.
That sounds super cool, thanks.
The one thing that really stood out for me from the Queer Lexicon Workshop, or at least from what I've seen on social media of it, was all the incredibly rich and diverse queer terminology that exists in Mandarin and Cantonese. One that particularly was really amusing to me was the, I guess, the otter, cub, bear, twink classification system for gay men that has somewhat of an equivalence in Chinese, but with completely different animals. I think wolves, and pigs and monkeys were involved. I thought it was really, really charming and just really, really cool to find out that there's like a local equivalent of this international classification system that's like got very particular cultural inflections. So I'm just wondering if you have any terms like that in Chinese that you find particularly interesting or amusing.
Yeah, totally. I was thinking about this, just the different terms. So the term that I'm thinking of and a term that was particularly memorable for me during the workshop, because I remember laughing really hard about it. I just thought it was a really hilarious term. And it's the term ha tao, which means shrimp head. And oh my goodness, the story behind it was, the explanation behind it was just absolutely wow. So the term ha tao refers to essentially like a person or somebody that you're interested in as having like as a sexual partner. And so as folks know who eat sort of whole shrimp, often what you do is you pull off the head first, because you don't eat the head and then you just eat the body. So the term ha tao refers to sexual partners that you don't find attractive in terms of like the aesthetics of their face. Like, you don't think they look, they're, you don't think they're very good looking, but you find that they have an attractive body. So it's this idea of like, just remove the head and then the sexual partner is like ready to, you know, you're ready to engage with this person.
I actually really love that. It's kind of, it's kind of like Butterface.
Yeah.
But
ooh,
I think a little bit.
That term, Butterface?
Yeah. So basically it's tech. Well, I don't know if it's particularly like, it must be particularly directed towards women because the term is but her face, meaning that she has a good body.
Oh, but her face is not very good looking.
But right, it's right. I love the shrimp one because it's so like culturally specific.
Yeah, I know.
It's great.
Yeah, it was really hilarious. I remember my jaw dropped when the person explained. I was like, what?
That's too good.
It's too good. It's honestly too good. I'm like, this is just kind of cruel, like a little cruel, but also really clever.
Yeah.
And I just also love and find it really interesting that the word queer in a lot of non-English languages is just the word queer transliterated into their native alphabet instead of having, like, say, a completely local equivalent of the word. Like we've already talked about in Mandarin Chinese, it's kuar, which I think is probably, like, the best localization or the best translation of the word queer just by pure coincidence that kuar also means, like, a cool person. I know in Japanese, there's something similar, except it's not in kanji, it's in katakana. I think it's just also the word queer. And in Russian and in Russian queer circles, they also use the word kvye, which is, like, a more, like, youthful and a more recent word. And that sometimes this is used alongside of LGBT, or sometimes just in place of LGBT, which, again, is another English language acronym. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about the word queer and what the word means and what does it mean to you?
It's a big question, but one I'm ready to answer because I'm very gay, TM. I do have some thoughts that I wanted to share about what you just talked about, Jade, regarding this sort of, I guess, loan word, right? Is probably the best way to put it for queer. I have some feelings about that because I understand the desire to have a word queer because I think that queerness is very much all-encompassing versus 同志 or 同志, which is a little bit more specific to like homosexuality. Mm. But I also love the history of that word, that term, for those who are not familiar, is that 同志 comes from a time in communist China when those who were, basically gay, wanted to be positively associated. And so they decided to take the word for comrade, which is also 同志, and they're like, we're gonna call ourselves now, that's our term now. So if you're gay, you're comrade. And I think that that was such a bold move in terms of, you know, assessing the kind of cultural and social political landscape and saying, we are going to claim this term for ourselves in order to remove the stigma from who we are as people. Mm-hmm. So I personally still really like that term, even though I know that it's more specifically about homosexuality. So referring to like, you know, gay men and lesbian women. But that said, so back to the term, the loan word for queer, I think as much as I also use kuar or ho'yi, like cool child, but also queer, I have some reluctance around the term because I think that people often want to frame queerness as a Western concept. And so the fact that the terms that we're using in our local context are loan words that are loaned from the English word queer, I think it has that kind of implication that, you know, we don't have our own term, so we took from the English term, the Western like concept, and we brought it over to our culture. But I'm sure, you know, all of us here know that queerness has existed in cultures for so long. Like, for example, in Chinese culture, there's like cut sleeve love, right? Look it up if you're not familiar. It's really cute.
It's a really romantic story.
Yeah, it's so romantic. And so I think that sometimes the fact that we loan that word from English, it kind of does us a disservice. And I'm more interested in how we'll keep finding terms or how the language will evolve. So we'll have our own term that doesn't rely on the English term queer in order to establish queerness in within our cultures, because like I said, they've already existed for so long, so we don't really need to rely on that. That said, though, the word queer to me means a lot of things. I think this is also tied into the philosophy behind Queer Reads Library and the kind of titles that we collect. But for me, queerness is not really just about the people that I'm attracted to or the people that I want to be in committed relationships with. Like, I think that's just only a part of what being queer means to me. I think queerness encompasses essentially a lifestyle and approach. It's a political principle. It's a foundation for my praxis and also my practice as like a person in life. And so I would say that I approach queerness in all aspects of my life. So whether that be how I care about the people around me or how I choose to configure my relationships or what I consider to be kinship ties or family and how I regard that, or the way that I approach revolutionary politics, I think all of those things are included in queerness, including my own gender and sexuality. So I think queerness is really nice because it embodies so much, and it kind of, as I've said before, I think queerness escapes definition, and that's what I like about it, because I think LGBTQ, for example, as much as some people find a lot of empowerment in those terms, and you know, no hate to that, I think that there is also a lot of expectations or sort of predetermined cultural notions that are tied to a lot of those terms, like being lesbian. Like when you say the word lesbian or you think of a lesbian woman, like I think culturally there's so many things that come up, or a gay man, or someone who's bisexual, or someone who's transgender. I think there are connotations around that. Whereas queer, I think it sort of slips and slides between those cracks and spaces, and it says like, no, you can't define me. You're gonna try to catch me, but I'm gonna run away, bye. And so I think that's why I personally really like using the word queer to identify myself, as well as how we approach the library. Because with the library, we're also not just interested in books that are explicitly queer, that talk about sex and relationships. We also just want books that are about the life of queer people. So as long as queer folks are making those books, we want to know about it. Like if they're talking about, I don't know, making a grilled cheese, we don't actually have a title like that, but that sounds cool. If a gay person wants to make something about a zine about grilled cheese, hit me up, we'll put it in the library.
I can do that. If that's an open invitation.
Yes it is. We are okay, open, perfect, to new titles. So that's what I would say about the queer,
yeah, the term. I think that's a super beautiful sentiment. And I also, what you said earlier about the word queer in non-English languages really stuck with me too.
I'm thinking back to a panel discussion that you did for Organizing Ideas, the podcast, in which Rachel, you said that the content curated for QRL is largely meant to center queer subjectivities, but also specifically that the library is meant to sit at the intersection of queerness and Asianness, among other things. I guess now that we were on the topic, right? Tell us a little bit more about that in context with QRL's global community. Why is curating queer Asian works purposeful?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think one that we are still constantly negotiating within the library itself and when we talk amongst our team. But, you know, initially, like I said, the library started out being Caitlin and Beatrice's personal collection. And that was kind of across the board. Like, it wasn't just queer Asian titles or books or zines. It was basically just queer books that were important in their lives, influential, and brought them a lot of comfort and the like. And so it wasn't until later that we started to more intentionally curate queer Asian content. And I think a big part of it is just because, I mean, that's who we are. Like the three of us who are running the library, that's who we are as people. We're queer and Asian. And so we're interested in reading that content, but also speaking to those intersections of identities, because there's enough content about whiteness and queerness, as we all know, right here, especially in North America, for example, or so-called North America. And I think that part of what we want to do is we want people to feel seen when they come to our library and read the stuff that's there. We want people to feel like, oh, right, I see a part of myself in that, or I feel some comfort in reading that about myself. And we just wanted to really hone in on the focus, because if we had curated a library that's simply queer, which is not simple at all, right? It's really complex. But if we had a library that was focused on queerness more broadly, I think that library would kind of be never ending, right? It would grow to like a maybe unmanageable size. But I think having a bit of a focus is important. And I think it's become even more significant in our approach to curation ever since I moved back to Vancouver from Hong Kong, because at first we were focusing on artists, queer Asian artists based on the continent, and also some diasporic artists. But ever since I moved back, and because I'm connected to a lot of queer Asian people in the diaspora, it makes for a really great way to build a network here, and also being able to have that exchange between the continent and also abroad in the diaspora. So for example, in 2019, when I was first putting together the Queer Reads Library Vancouver collection, which hadn't existed prior to that, we only had the Hong Kong collection that was kept in Beatrix's studio at the time, I reached out to queer Asian artists that I know here. And I was lucky enough to get some titles where we would get two copies, and we were able to keep one copy here in Vancouver. And also I was able to hand off another copy so that it could be exhibited back in Asia when we have pop-ups again. So I think that there's a meaningful kind of exchange there across the diaspora and also the so-called, you know, motherland or the continent. So I think that's what we're really aiming to do, is being able to build those bridges and connect those artists. Because ultimately, one of the things that we often talk about in the library or just within our team is that, you know, it's about the books, but it's not really about the books. It's about the people that we meet, the readers that engage with us, the artists who reach out to us and that we get to connect with and talk to, and the space in the community that we end up building. That's really what it's about. And the books are simply a vessel for that connection.
CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. As a campus and community station, CJSF strives to provide points of view that are rarely expressed on mainstream media. This includes music that is not the top 40 and news you will not find on the big media outlets. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca. Just a bend in time.
And how does it feel to get up?
If you're just tuning in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM, we're talking to Rachel Lau, who is one of the co-librarians, co-collaborators of Queer Reads Library, which is a mobile library operating in Hong Kong and Vancouver. Now we're going to jump into talk a little bit more about QRL's exhibit at the Vancouver Art Book Fair. I believe that is taking place, that exhibition in itself is taking place this coming Thursday on the 22nd. So tell us more about your show and tell at the Art Book Fair. How is it going to be different from your showcasing last year? And what can people look forward to this year?
So, I mean, a lot has changed since the debut of QRL Vancouver's collection at Vancouver Art Book Fair in 2019. So at that time, you know, this time last year, I displayed the library the way that we usually do it, where we put all the books out and then people just came to read and just hang out and look at the titles. And I was able to talk to people, ask them, oh, you know, what are you interested in? Like, what kind of things are you looking for? Maybe you'll like this title, and just chat about our library. So the fair itself is happening this weekend, and that's going to be online because of obviously COVID-19, but it's pretty exciting. So in that way, we're not able to show our library the same way that I did last year. And so we decided to do an art book month event, which is a show and tell. And I mean, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's sort of alluding to elementary school days, like grade school days, where you bring in a, you know, an object and you show your class and then you tell them about it. It's very much the same thing. And so our intention with the event and the exhibition, if you will, is to emulate the experience of being able to read things from our library, but through an online platform. And so one of the things that we've been doing sort of leading up to the event on Thursday of next week is showcasing titles that are in our library. So specifically the Vancouver QRL collection. So what I've been doing is photographing the books and then writing little reviews and blurbs about them so people can get a sense of that title and feel like they're able to read that title, even though we can't have a physical library pop-up that we've done in the past. And so the event itself, the show and tell, is basically that spotlight that we've been doing on our social media account, but more in depth. So we've invited three artists, so Trey Ma, Amanda Wan, and Phoebe Ferrer, who have titles in our library, and they're going to go in depth and like dive deep for the titles that they have in our library. So they're going to talk about the process of making them, you know, their own thoughts on it now, reading back on it. And in addition to that, we're also having a panel discussion where they get to talk a little bit more about their process as queer artists and why they engage in printed matter and making publications and zines. And then we also have a Q&A after. So our hope is that it has this feeling of almost like a bonus, right? Because I think that reading books is really about being in conversation with the writer. Whether you consciously think about that or not, I think it's a discussion, it's a conversation. And so what we're doing is that we're having an actual conversation with the artist. So we're bringing that experience forward that emulates a reading experience that people can't necessarily have in the same way right now.
QRL is always adding more work to its collection. Do you have like a favorite work right now that's either in the Vancouver collection or in the Hong Kong collection?
That's always a hard question because I feel like I love so many titles in the library and it's constantly growing. And honestly, there are some titles in the Hong Kong collection that I haven't even been able to read yet because I'm on another continent, but I would love to because Beatrix and Caitlin tells me about them. I'm like, oh my gosh, these sound so cool. I want to read them. But I think the one that comes to mind at the moment and a book that I had talked about before is Flesh by Mary Jean Chan, who is a poet who was born in Hong Kong, but now is based in the UK. And Flesh is a term in fencing. And I forget what particular move it refers to, but it alludes to Mary Jean Chan's experience as a fencer in childhood and teenagehood. And in that book of poetry, she discusses the complexities of language, specifically Chinese language, and what it means to be queer and Chinese and somebody who grew up in Hong Kong, but is now in London. Or the UK specifically, I'm not sure about London. I thought that was a really beautiful book of poetry and one that I felt really seen by. And I remember reading that book and feeling really touched by it. And also so many of the experiences resonated so much. And I thought that the way that she played with language by incorporating Chinese and English into the poems was just masterful, frankly. So I think that still holds as one of my favorite works that's pretty recent addition to our library.
What about one that you are excited to exhibit for the event coming this Thursday? Is any one that you would like recommend?
Right. So there's only really three titles in that presentation, right? Because we only have so much time. But I think one that I'm particularly interested in and I think is quite unique is Amanda Wan's book, which or zine, Amanda Wan's zine, called Away and Back Again. And that one, in their zine, it's a very interesting engagement with sequencing and also poetry, because it opens left to right, which is, as most folks know who are familiar with like Chinese and Japanese, for example, is how characters are read, right? Like you read from right to left. And so the book opens from left to right. And that's pretty atypical of English books, I think, but Amanda has chosen to do that. And so it includes these illustrations and poems that talk about queerness and also has a lot of engagement with this idea of acknowledgement. So acknowledging where they came from in terms of like their family, but also acknowledging the queer kinship and ties that make what they do possible and make their life the way that it is. And I think that it's a really beautiful work and one that I'm excited about.
So we've talked a little bit about this already. Would you mind giving like a brief once over again about the future of QRL and what you have in the works?
Totally. So in terms of the future of Queer Reads Library, we have a couple of things going. I mean, obviously we have the Queer Reads Library show and tell coming up on the 22nd on Thursday. And in addition to that, we have a website that's coming pretty soon. And that's going to include a catalog of our entire library so people can see what's in our actual collection. And part of it is our efforts to connect with our readers, even in a time when we can't have the pop-ups the way that we used to, or the workshops and talks the way that we used to before COVID. And in addition to that, we also will be exhibiting at the Chinese Cultural Center in San Francisco for the Woman exhibit. And that's coming up in February of next year. But obviously, COVID considered, things are constantly changing, but we are really hoping to be able to exhibit. And that will include a showcasing of some of our titles that's selected by an artist based in the Bay Area, choosing from like our library and sort of their favorites. And then we'll also be showcasing sort of a work in progress of the queer lexicon and what we've been doing. And hopefully we'll have the print publication for the time of that exhibition as well. So, I mean, on the note of the queer lexicon, what we've been working on, as I mentioned earlier, is not only the publication and getting it ready for the exhibit itself, but we're also working on creating the online component of the queer lexicon and hopefully making it a lexicon that's alive and that people can add to and that we can grow and build over time. So those are the main things that Queer Reads Library is working on. I mean, what comes next, who knows, but that's what we're doing for now.
And just to round off this interview, is there anything that you're working on, Rachel, right now or have had worked on recently? What can we expect from Rachel in the future? Please answer in third person.
Okay. What you can expect from Rachel? That's a great question. And thank you for that. I mean, I have a handful of things coming up or have recently been shared. So one of the things that I've done recently that's been launched is with Unit Pit. So I was part of the iSpy disposable camera project along with 9 other artists. And that was a really interesting project where they mailed us the disposable cameras along with a prompt that was iSpy ... And we needed to take photos on this roll according to that theme or that prompt. And so that's online now, and you can find it on Unit Pit's website. I also recently participated in a zine installation for an exhibit called Particle Wave, where specifically the exhibit's called Duality Paradox. And that was curated by Silvana D'Angelo and Aaron Moran. And that was in Harrison Hot Springs, of all places, was the residency that they were doing. And you can find that online at particlewave.space. So you can see my zine there, as well as a kind of interactive online collage that you can play around with, and it's pretty cool. And other upcoming things, well, I'll be exhibiting at Vancouver Art Book Fair this weekend. So come say hi to me at my virtual table at VancouverArtBookFair.com. And then later this month, I'll also be at Canzine, which is also virtual this year. So if you want to find me there, I'll be at, I think I'll be at Collage Cliff. That's the, because it's an RPG kind of setup. And so there's different islands and like cities and mountains that you could be at. And I'm at Collage Cliff. So come find me at Canzine. And then other than that, as I mentioned earlier about the sound work that I've been doing, You Have One New Message will be kind of the next thing I work on once the book fairs are over this month. And that will be coming up in January of 2021.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Rachel, for doing this interview, for sitting down with us. Y'all can catch Queer Reads Library at the show and tell at Vancouver Art Book Fair on October 22nd at 6 p.m. You can find the registration information on Queer Reads Library's Instagram. That's queer_reads_library, and that's on Instagram. You can find out more information about Rachel's work and what they're doing and all that on Instagram and other social media also. That's Rachel Lau Art, RachoLauArt on social media.
If you want to go directly to the registration link for the show and tell, you can actually just visit QRL, the letters, .eventbrite.com. So that will quickly take you to the registration if you don't want to go on Instagram.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you for clarifying. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Rachel, for joining us on the program today.
Oh, for sure. Thanks for having me. I had a lot of fun.
And we look forward to seeing what else QRL does and what you have in store.
Great. Thank you so much.
Democracy Now!, hosted by award-winning independent journalist Amy Goodman. Tune in to your daily progressive news, aired Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. on CJSF.